Welcome to the Phases Podcast, where we explore life's phases, purpose, and growth. I'm your host, Anita Goa. Today, we embark on a journey through life's phases with wisdom and acceptance through the lens of Sanskrit. I'm so thrilled to be doing so with my guest today, who is no other than Manurama, my first Sanskrit teacher from my days in New York City. Sanskrit is the language of yoga, or as Manurama calls it, the language of our soul. We're exploring the transformative power of Sanskrit and also how we can embrace change and the insights that come from a life well lived. Manurama shares her profound knowledge and personal experiences while guiding us in how to approach each life stage with an open heart and a curious mind. She also takes us through some Sanskrit pronunciation. I hope you'll enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed it. Without further ado, let's tune in for an inspiring conversation that promises to enrich your perspective on life's journey and all its phases. Enjoy. Namaste, Manurama ji. Welcome to the Phases Podcast. It's so lovely to have you and see you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you. It's been a while and I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this. It's just wonderful to be in your presence again. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. I always begin asking all the guests the same question. What is life teaching you at the moment?
What a beautiful question. I love a beautiful question because beautiful questions always lead to profound answers. And I think what life is teaching me lately is how to soften more. Not that I don't feel that I've been hard or anything. So it's not that it's not a dramatic thing from hard to soft, but rather it's more to move slower to, when I refer to soft, I mean move slower, listen deeper, linger a little bit more. Yeah, that's what I mean by softer.
And is there certain events that have brought you to that, or is it just life that has led you to the softness of it all?
Yeah, that's a great question too. You know, I think it's a mixture of life and loss and gain, and working with students and being sort of, when you're a teacher, you ride shotgun with people in their lives, you know, and you're sort of riding alongside. And then what I always say when you are a parent, let's say, we raise our kids, for example. But everybody knows that when you have kids, you're also raising yourself. You're just raising yourself at a different place, a different time in your life. In the phase of the child's life, it's an early phase, and you're not going through kindergarten, first grade, second grade. So you have quite a lot of knowledge about how to guide the child in that. But then you're in your own phase of development and you're growing yourself. And so I feel after having ridden shotgun with so many people, I've been in yoga more than 40 years. And now to be sort of the culmination of, like I said, life, some losses, some gains, and also living in New York, which perhaps you know, but New York moves in a very fast pace. And somehow the softer, as I mentioned it, as a slower, as a kind of listening deeper, I think it's a little bit revolutionary for somebody living in New York, but it feels natural for me now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. It's something that I resonate with. As you know, I grew up in Norway and moved to New York. New York never was a normal place for me because it was just so heightened constantly.
Right.
I always had that current of Norway sort of within me. And it was, of course, challenging to find that balance of the go, 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 but then also the relaxation. And I kind of had to learn that as I was living there too. So this podcast is called Phases because I resonate with that word, having been in just so many different phases of life. And life goes in cycles, right? There's a beginning, right. There's a middle, there's an end, and it just so continues. And we're constantly learning and evolving as we go along.
I think that oftentimes we can, one of the things that comes to my mind when you speak about phases is we can often feel like we long for a phase that we had. And one of the things about phases is that it has, similar to the Om cycle, a beginning, an A force, an U force, a middle, and then a Ma force, the end. And so one thing I've learned in my life, and perhaps that's where the slower or that softer is that I'm aware that there are phases that I like, that I don't like, but somehow I'm more interested in seeing, pulling back and seeing the bigger picture rather than liking a phase or not liking a phase, but instead, I don't know, it's sort of like maybe it's a mother's eye, maybe it's a pull back eye, it's a yogic eye, definitely a yogic eye, but it's the process and just watching that. And of course, I enjoy a strawberry like anybody else, but I'm not living for a particular cycle. I recognize that a phase will come, you know? And it was one of the things I learned actually when my guru passed from his body, because that was a great phase to be somebody's star pupil, their youngest, their darling. You know, that's a great phase of life. And then I was very good at organizing things for him and supporting him in the teaching. So that was a wonderful identity that was part of that phase. But then he, of course, shifted from form. And I'll never forget the look he gave me, that last satsang. And he just looked at me with this very faraway look, like, I'll see you soon, my old friend, kind of a thing. And it was in right after that, that of course he shifted from form and that day. And I remembered being like, whoa, I liked that. That was great identity. But sometimes we can choose to step into a new phase, and sometimes we're thrust into a new phase, has been my experience. And when I've liked a previous phase or an identity that goes with it, I have found it harder to step into that thrusted phase. But I've learned quite a bit to listen to the, I don't know how to call, I don't know if I'm going to say this well, but anyway, as we're working it out here, it's this, I've learned to listen to more subtle layers. And I know that the life and its phases will move. It's best to accept that rather than fight it, because the fighting of it is very painful. And the accepting of it doesn't mean a sense of defeat, but it means, okay, what am I being called to see here in this new place? You know? And I would say that the student in me had to pass for the teacher in me to evolve. Not that you are not always a student and that you're not always drawing from that, but I just moved to a different place at a different time. And we all, I'm sure anybody listening here is going to understand that. I'm sure you understand that. But what I play with now, which I think may be useful, is what am I called to see through this? Even if I don't want it, even if I don't like it in some cases, I'm called to see something or to see something through myself. And sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's, I don't want to see this. And I preferred that phase. What happened to that phase? But I have learned not to resist it. I mean, I did resist it many times, kicking and screaming, you know, or suffering. But like I said, it's been an evolution for me that is really definitely evolved, and haven't, you know, knock some wood, I haven't been resisting too much lately. Well, let's see. So that's my experience with it.
I love that. I never know where these conversations are going to go. I agree with you. There are some phases I was in, like being in New York. I loved that phase. It was an amazing phase. I loved moving to London, an amazing phase. Didn't like the phase of going through perimenopause. That was very challenging. And I resisted a lot. But now over on the other side, I am grateful for that phase also, because I learned a lot. And here I am on the other side, sort of reflecting a little bit into those other phases. And Sanskrit kept coming back up. You kept coming back up because you were my first Sanskrit teacher. And I have such fond memories of that. And I've tried to pass on to my own students the importance of Sanskrit, the importance of yoga wisdom and yoga philosophy. And during my most challenging phases, it hasn't been asana that has supported me through it. It's always been the wisdom that yoga gives that has been the current that has pulled me through it.
Beautiful. I love that. You have to always be in a place of curiosity, which is what I consider the role of studentship. You have to be always curious, open, listening. I mean, we call it Shrotriyaha. Shrotriyaha are the wise ones. Who are those wise ones? They are the ones who, at some point in their life, listened from Shru, this root. So they are the ones who listened. They have listened, and that's how they were able to build their knowledge. But the modern malady or the modern habit is to not listen, and that becomes tricky. And I think the way that we transition through these phases of life and study and all of this is through a deeper listening. And I would say, if I return back to what I said about softer, I would say I'm listening a lot more. I think that's been helpful because absolutely there are phases that we like and phases we don't like and phases within the phases even. And I would say, yeah, menopause is not an easy phase. It's a bit of a whoa. Or I've experienced that myself. But like, so that's like almost like a phase within a phase. But I would say the deepest skill that continues through studying and being a teacher for me that has been is listening. Really refining that listening. And I think when I'm transiting through a phase, it's not like I'm walking along and suddenly I'm going into another phase. I don't think it's like that. It's sort of happening as the other phase is ending, as this phase is happening. And then it just sort of relay race, you kind of catch that. But when I'm listening, I can feel that happening more. And I can, you know, one thing I think in the early years of my own life, I resisted. I was like, no, I don't want it to be that way, whatever it was that I didn't want. Now I'm at a place which is, like I said, not defeat. That's different. You give up, you don't care. But there's another way to approach it, which is you accept the nature of life, the nature of reality, the nature of manifest life. And you try through the listening to flow with it in whatever it is that it's presenting to you, whether it's age or whether it's moving house or whether it's shifting relationships or whatever it may be. And so, yeah, I think listening so that we can all grow ourselves is a very helpful thing in terms of kind of moving into phases. And we can always draw things from older phases or consider future ones. But what I understand is that, and I've seen this also writing next to other students, that the phasal changes can be tricky. You know, and so that's a beautiful title for the podcast, and not just title, but focus, because who couldn't use some support with phases?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, right? I love that. Thank you for sharing all of that. This is wonderful. Well, let's talk about Sanskrit. Most of the listeners here will be yoga students, but not everyone might know exactly what Sanskrit is. So will you share with us what Sanskrit is and why is it important to learn Sanskrit or try to practice it?
You know, it's such a profound question. It sounds like a simple question, right? This idea, like, what is that? But it's really quite deep. And I think one of the things that I've noticed that's a habit that I'm not thrilled about is we sort of section things off. This is this system. That's that system. These people are interested in Sanskrit. Those people are not. When we're all in this yogic study together, whatever may be the way in which we are drawn, some people are drawn to one aspect. Some people are drawn to another aspect. So I really want people who are listening not to think of, oh, am I good at language? I'm not good at language. Do I feel drawn to this or not? Just be open to what a practice is. I'm not an asana practitioner, but I understand the value of asana. And if somebody was telling me about asana, I would be really interested to hear. So it's not only like I like red and I don't like blue or something like that. You have to be really open and forget about this separative thing that can sometimes rise in the yoga world and whatnot. So that's one thing as a kind of a premise, an underneath premise. Sanskrit, I mean, you know, my God, to answer that question, what is Sanskrit, is multi-layered. And I'll start with basically Sanskrit is a language of soul, a language of psyche. And most people live in the world with this concept that you cannot know your soul. And that's completely incorrect. You absolutely can know your soul and you must know your soul, because that's the purpose from the yogic understanding. That's the purpose of life, to understand yourself on all the levels. Now, that doesn't mean that we throw out the body-mind level, but it one of the ways in which we elevate ourselves. So the yogis describe understanding the nature of myself and who am I and that soul. And so Sanskrit has a variety of ways you can approach it. You can approach the grammar, you can approach the chanting. People love the chanting. You can approach different aspects of it. And I think many people are often afraid of the grammar. Just don't be afraid. Nothing is beyond you. I used to tell myself, nothing is beyond me. So you borrow that mantra, that English mantra, nothing is beyond me. I can look at this. But what happens is if the Sanskrit is complex, so when the volume of complexity starts to rise, and then it rises, and then, you know, you could bring it down a little bit, then it rises again, and you're like, oh God, and then it rises again. What happens is people go kind of underwater, and then they sort of dip out. So I would say, you know, for the listeners, that you want to try to dial in rather than dial out. Pay attention, be present with it. What do you like about it? Listen, ask yourself, connect with your own intuition. Sanskrit is the language of intuition. It's the language of the heart. It's the language of the soul. And it is the gift of the rishis, but the gift from a seer is not like a box with a bow on it. It is the gift of knowledge. It is the gift of understanding. And it is the gift of revelation. And revelation, the thing is, revelation is always available to us, but we don't make ourselves ready to receive it. So what Sanskrit teaches us alongside the knowledge, it also teaches us how to be a place where knowledge can find you, where knowledge can be revealed through you, and then the revelation can find you. You say, wow. And what I always tell people is Sanskrit is a language of wisdom. If the wisdom comes, you know, life is very different when you live with wisdom than when you live without it. So wisdom doesn't look like it's giving you anything, but as a matter of fact, your life is vastly different, much more balanced, much happier. Okay, you may go through a difficult phase, but try it in your life. Go through a difficult phase without wisdom, then go through the difficult phase with wisdom. It's very different. Wisdom doesn't say, bibbidi bobbidi boo, I've got it handled. Wisdom says, I'll walk alongside you and show you how you can walk through this and how this becomes your blessing, even if it's something very, very difficult. That's not a small task to achieve. So it's not a snap of a fingers. And Sanskrit contributes to that on multiple layers, through multiple layers. And of course, what everybody says, Sanskrit is language of vibration. My guru talked about that for years. It is the essential language of our soul. So that's how I understand Sanskrit, and that's the way in which I work with students. And then, of course, there are specific things you must begin with in the study. You have to start with the alphabet and then the grammar and so on and so forth. And I think oftentimes for the Westerner, they see it as a part, like another culture. But that's not the best way to approach Sanskrit. You want to bring it actually close. It's not some other culture, some other people, that will keep a kind of a veil between you and what it's trying to teach you. So I always tell people, bring it close. It's not gonna do anything bad. It's gonna do only good things. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, I've never heard you say the language of the soul and the language of wisdom. That is really beautiful. Can you give some examples?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think Sanskrit is a self-taught thing. I think it needs guides, it needs wisdom, it needs somebody who understands how to move around in that subject to help somebody open it up. But I can take a look at something. And for example, a very famous mantra is Purnamadah. It's from Upanishads, from Isha Upanishad. Purnamidam, Purnat Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnameva Vashishyate. This mantra is always saying Purnam, 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 you know, Purnameva, Purnamadaya, Purnam. It's always Purnam something. Purna, Purnam, Purnat. What is Purna? It derives from the root prr, which means to complete, to fill. This mantra, on a very fundamental level, when we chant it, we are reminded of our wholeness. And what we struggle with is that sense of wholeness in our soul, in our sense of self. And that's why Sanskrit is so useful, because when we chant it, we are returned to our soul on some level. Whether we can recognize that or not, that takes time to develop in oneself. But we are returned to our soul. And it turns out that most of us don't really spend a lot of time with our soul, but the soul helps us experience that totality that we are. We know our body-mind reality. My name is so-and-so. I like to do such-and-such. I eat such-and-such. I work such-and-such. But when it comes to the soul, we're sort of left in no man's land. And this is the subject of yoga. We are able to come back to our soul and experience that wholeness. And so the mantra keeps reminding us that is whole or complete. This is whole and complete. From the whole comes the whole. And it culminates into verily that wholeness that you are remains. So that even a portion of that wholeness is eventually going to resolve in our own consciousness as the totality. And that's what we're doing here. We're trying to build that sense of wholeness. Now, certain identities feel very full and wonderful because we like those identities. You know, I'm married to so-and-so, or I'm free from so-and-so. Whatever the identity is that we like, that can feel truly complete for us, you know? I remember telling my brother, this is the best. You know, this time with my guru, I was like in the vibe, in the swing. This was great. And then, of course, that shifted. But life is always a mixture of rises and then falls. Transitions, developments. And I think if you can hold your soul as a primary element in every phase, it will be a tremendous, your life, you will see as this continuum that soul is with you through everything. But this is what you did in these years, and this is what you did in these years, and this is what you did in those years, you know? And that helped you move deeper into that sense of purnam, that sense of wholeness. And Sanskrit mantras are very beautiful. They're always telling you something positive. You know, they're always saying something. May we not harm people. May we be kind. May we understand. So often it's trying to help us really step into these beautiful teachings without it being, you know, oftentimes we can hear these yamas, niyamas, and we feel like, you be honest, satya, or you be non-harming, ahimsa. But we don't really take the time to understand what that means on that fullness scope. So of course, that's where a teacher comes in that can be helpful. But also the mantras, the more we chant them and the more we relate with them, they merge with our breath, you know, they merge into our breath. That starts to merge with our heart. That circulates through us. And that becomes what we are able to carry with us when we talk to our children, when we meet with our partners, when we relate with the world. So Sanskrit integrates into our whole being. And it's also a language.
Yes. And it is wonderful for our nervous system. It really downregulates the nervous system. It calms our mind. And that is the definition of yoga, according to Patanjali, right? Sutra 1.2 and 1.3 gets you in contact with your soul and your inner being. And then through the vibration and through using of the sound and using of your voice, it is tremendously healing.
Extremely. Very healing. Also, certain, you know, to get into the mechanics of it, certain sounds are made up of certain mouth positions, as you know well. And so those sounds hit in different locations on the palate. Now, those locations don't stop. They vibrate into the heart. They go through the circulatory system. And they also go specifically, the big one is to the head. And they'll tick different areas. And specifically, Sanskrit does a lot of work on the frontal lobe. And so it will, as you described it, down-regulate the nervous system, calm the nervous system. And as my guru says in his Fundamentals of Yoga book, you know, he says, when the mind is calm, then you can absorb the teachings, you can absorb the understanding, and you can go deeper into your understanding of yoga and what I'm calling soul, same thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, really beautiful. So it is, when you explain it that way, is sad when someone does not allow themselves to be exposed to such a beautiful thing, that there is this wall between what the teaching really is and what is perceived through a culture or a different language, right?
Yeah.
There's so much loss there.
Well, yeah. I mean, I from my perspective, there's loss there. But I also have come to the place now where in the old days, I used to correct a lot of things. Now, I trust that the universe is helping people grow according to what they feel drawn to. And if they ask me, then I will give them some correction. Otherwise, I kind of am like, great, because I think sometimes people want to just have a tattoo and they don't really care what it means. They just have a concept of what it means and they want to feel something. And I feel that that's okay too. There's a place for that. And yes, from that really elevated place, which I believe you're speaking about, you know, yeah, you wish more people would allow themselves the opportunity to really immerse in this kind of understanding, because it's so transformative in the most positive way. But you have to develop. The biggest thing, I think, is courage and patience. And patience doesn't mean you dip out and you just go to sleep and then you wait. That's one way to handle a difficulty with being patient. But Sanskrit is not instant. You can have instant contact with mantras, but the grammar, that has to be developed, and that takes a little time. But why not? Why not date Sanskrit and enjoy and savor these little understandings and these moments? You know, that's what I invite people into.
Exactly. So to invite our listener in to maybe start practicing a few words, should we maybe take them through a few common words that they could try to practice?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You have one? Go ahead.
I can pull out a few and then pronounce them maybe how they're often pronounced, and then you can give us the correct way.
I love it. I love it. Great.
Okay. Asana.
So people will often pronounce this word, as you just said, and I always tell them it's not a hot room. It is asana. So the root is as, which means to sit. And I always wink at people and tell them, you're not going to forget that the word is as, because that relates with another word in English, but it's asana. Asana. Asana means seat, posture, pose. And it's like the concept of taking the seat of that. So drop the jaw down on the first syllable and don't drop the jaw down on the second one. So keep it, because it's the first syllable is long ah. So you say asana, and that's how you say asana.
What about chakra?
Yeah, so this one I recently talked about and it went like wildfire on social media because, you know, people are like, what? I don't know why, but they think that the word is chakra. And what I tell them is, if it shocks you, it's not a chakra. The word is a ch sound and it's pronounced chakra. Now, the ch in English is more forward. So we would say ch, like this, ch. Whereas in Sanskrit, it's further back. It's more ch. But that's fine. These are little things. You just can hold a slight smile on your face and that helps you pronounce it. And you say chakra. Chakra means a wheel or a disc and or an energetic center. And so like in Indian dance, they do chakras, they do spins, right? So it's not always an energetic center in the body. And I think because the cha is so closely related to a sha sound in Sanskrit, people might have said that, or maybe somebody heard it, but there is a misunderstanding that it's a chakra. But like I tell people, if it shocks you, it's not a chakra, it's chakra. And that's how you say chakra.
I love that. What about mantra?
So that's mostly mispronounced from people in London or England, I've noticed. It's not so, people don't normally say that over in States, but I'm not sure where that comes from, but it's, we don't have an a sound. We don't have a man. We don't have ashram, things like where the palate goes wide on the sound. We don't have it go wide. We have it go straight down. So we would say mantra. Mantra. And some, maybe people would say, they would get the drop down, so they would go man, but then they would go tra. So they would likely say mantra. But you hear that tra, tra. That's a very Ameriscrit or an Englishcrit. So I say, no, it has to be off the teeth. So you would say mantra. You can bite down just slightly on the teeth. Mantra. That's how you say mantra.
And what about prana?
This one is a little tricky for people. But again, you would say like this. So the tricky part is the R and the N. Everything else is doable. So let's just take a look at those little details. Now, again, when you look at details, some people get overwhelmed. You don't have to get overwhelmed, nor you just dial in, don't dial out. So first of all, the R in Sanskrit is not forward as it is in English. In English, the R, if you say Robert, Roger, door, the R is very forward. But in Sanskrit, the R is back and up. So this is like ara. you take the tip of the tongue and you tap into what we call this third mouth position. So you say, ara, ara, ara. Now it sounds almost like a D to the untrained ear, but it's not a D, it's an R. And so you say, ara. So if you say bra, it's not prana, it's bra. And then you make it long, bra. And then because that R is here, that forces the nasal in the word to become also in that position. We have a whole family of sounds at the third position in Sanskrit. For those of you who know, you remember that. For those of you who don't, you're just learning that. So that means you have na. So you say prana. And to the untrained ear, it sounds like you're doing country kirtan, but you're not doing country kirtan. You're just simply saying prana. You're bringing your tongue into the third for the R and then also for the nasal sound. So the word is prana. Prana, prana. That's how you say prana. And prana is life force.
And what about namaste?
Yes. So this one is, everybody will say namaste, something like that. But you have to accent on the second A and the last A because of accentuation in Sanskrit and metrics. Also, you have to get a bit of a flip in you have to get dexterous on your palate to get which becomes ste. So that's, if you can watch te, not everybody will be able to watch, it'll be ste. So you bring the S sound, then you bite down slightly on the ta sound, ste. That's the key to get. So it's namaste, namaste. And that's how you say namaste. But you have to be fast, otherwise you're going to say like this, namaste. That doesn't sound very nice. So again, work on the S to the te sound. Namaste means respect to you. Now, a lot of people say it means the God in me bows to the God in you. That's commentary on top of what the meaning is. Commentary is fine, but it just needs to be reflected as commentary. So it's respect, namaha, and te, to you, respect to you. But in the Sanskrit world, we say namo namaha. Namah namah becomes namo namaha. So both are fine, and I enjoy both. And certainly if someone says to you, namaste, you have to say namaste. You don't just leave them hanging. You know, it's like good morning. You don't just walk away. You say good morning. Or they say good night. You say good night. You know what I mean? So in the same way with these greetings and these closings, namaste, namaste. But in terms of pronunciation, you want to get those marks, the second A and the last A. That's a good start. And it's a greeting of respect. And a greeting of respect is very, very nice to have.
Beautiful. Nice. Thank you for going over those. That is wonderful, because those are words that a lot of students will use, and this will be a good way for them to practice it. I'd love to talk a little bit about how to build a spiritual practice. Would you say something about that? Since we are all yogis here, first of all, are we allowed to call ourselves yogis when we practice yoga?
I would, I was literally going to say this, so I'm glad you asked that. I would call, if I was in the training years, I would call myself a yogi in training, because I really, for myself, I reserve the word yogi for those people who are established fully in the understanding of yoga. That's like the term. But I know that the modern world calls everybody yogi, yogini, and I get that. But I would say yogi in training. So a yogi in training needs to build their practice. And the first thing I would say is to really see within yourself, it'll probably reveal itself easily, but what you're drawn to. Some people are very drawn to asana, no problem. There's a lot to be established in yourself in that way. You get grounding, you get a connection with your form, you get a sense of ease in your body, you get a deeper, as my friend Sharon Gannon said, my dear guru sister, she said, you get a deeper connection with the earth. Yes, I agree. You get there's a certain kind of ease you find in your system, right? Where deeper teachings may become more easily felt for some people. Great. So you have to first listen to what speaks to you. If you feel curious about mantra, go towards that. Go towards that curiosity. If you feel curious about yoga philosophy, go towards it with the understanding that when you come to an ocean, you fill up a cup. You come back and then you look at that. You go to the ocean, you fill it up, you come back, you look at what's in there. And then next time you go, you bring another cup. Nobody drinks it all in a straw. So you go step by step. And your main job in the study of yoga philosophy is to not overwhelm yourself, but to identify where you're curious and one or two questions per session that you could grasp. That's it. You know, and some people are drawn to Tantra. Other people are drawn to Vedanta. Some people don't even know what those terms are, and they just want, they like hearing sex. But sense your own sense of where you're drawn and then nurture that. Now, with meditation, it's a little bit, I want to say a couple of things, but within those practices, you'll see what system. There's so many styles, I'm not going to name them all. So then there is meditation. My feeling is that everyone must try to build some meditative practice, whether it's alongside a Sanskrit practice, whether it's alongside an asana practice, or whether it's all. Because meditation is turning inward with oneself. And so when you sit quietly for any length of time, sometimes you're not always having this phenomenal, mind-blowing experience. Sometimes it's quite nothing. You're just sitting there. But keep sitting there, because what you don't know that I know and that Anita knows, that when you sit there, you draw the teachings and the teachers towards you. When you show up, you send a message to the universe, I'm ready for this. I want this. And so maybe you'll go through a period of a year, 2 years, 3 months, maybe a week, where you won't find that, but it will find you and it will open up for you. If you want to build a meditation practice, sometimes you feel this bliss of reality and sometimes it's quite regular. You don't feel. But I would say show up to class with an adept when it comes to meditation. You know, yogic practice is meant to be done in connection, in community, and we take that wisdom to our own personal practice. We do our work, then we go back. I would say one other thing, really hold sincerity in your heart around the practice, because that draws the best teachers and wisdom towards you. It has no choice but to come towards you when you are so sincere. It's like an absolute magnet. And don't go to yogic practice because you want to be a teacher instantly. Go because you want to enrich yourself. You want to understand. Then later that may evolve or you may do something else, but go because you want to understand yourself and the universe around you. And then by understanding yourself, you start to understand everything around you. So I would say those are my tips for building a practice.
Mm-hmm. Very great. And before we gradually close out here, you had mentioned asana and knowing asana, but not necessarily being an asana practitioner yourself. Is that right?
Yeah. So my background was I studied with my teacher at 13. So that was back in the 80s. And what that meant was that there weren't so many dynamic styles of asana that were readily known at that time. So a lot of the asana that I engaged as a kid was breathe and hang, what I call the breathe and hang yoga. And while that may have been lovely, you know, you come out, you feel good, I never felt so drawn to it. I was a very dynamic kid. I think if at the time there were some other of these more dynamic styles, I think I would have gotten drawn to it, perhaps. I don't know. But it was not my destiny. So of course I've engaged asana, but it has not been my path. I would say that of the various practices of yoga, I would be meditation, Sanskrit, yoga philosophy, pranayama, grounded much more in, and of course I understand asana, but I went the way of martial arts as a younger person. I studied martial arts, kung fu, Zhao Ge style for 10 years, more actually 12 years. You know, that dynamism spoke to me at that age. But like I said, I think if I had studied some of these more dynamic styles at the time, it would have matched and sort of helped me learn how to work with that energy. But I learned that through another method, through martial arts and through life. So you find different ways, you know, there's not one thing for every person. Everybody has to see what speaks to them. And then there's something in it for you.
Yeah. But it kind of also makes me think about how a lot of people, they say yoga, but they mean asana. And a lot of people will think that asana is yoga. So I found more and more due to social media that there's become a disconnection between what yoga is and what asana is. And also not knowing that the word yoga pose is asana.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So that's very common. I also encounter this. So yoga is the union. Yeah. And around the union, there are multiple practices that people engage to experience that union. So to call somebody who's a meditation teacher, not a yoga teacher, doesn't make sense. To call a Sanskrit teacher, not a yoga teacher, doesn't make sense. Yoga is the experience of yoga. It comes from yuj, to unite. It means the union of body, mind, and spirit and beyond. But you can engage different yogic practices to experience that union. So of course, in the modern time, that's well known. The postures are well known. The pose has yoga, but if you just go a little bit further in, you can see that multiple practices, they're just not as popular. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I have to explain that asana is not the totality of what yoga is.
Yes, we have to be to broaden our understanding to recognize that asana is one aspect of the practice and it's a beautiful aspect, and there are other aspects that create entry points for us. And some are drawn more to those than asana. Some are drawn to a mixture. So you have to see what speaks to you.
Exactly. Beautiful. Very, very enlightening. I would love you to chant a little bit for us at the end, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Be happy.
And before you do that, if you want to choose your own chant that you want to do, is there anything else that you would like to share? Something we haven't talked about, or anything that you think that we should know?
I don't feel like there's something we didn't talk about. I feel like we talked about a lot of very meaningful, profound teachings. Let me think for 1 second. Can I have 1 second to think about that?
Yep.
One thing I would say is sometimes when things are easier, I want to say this to follow up on what you had just said. When things are, it's easier to understand posture as yoga or pose or seat. However, it's easier to understand that. It's more physical. The more subtle things become, the harder it is for us to feel like we grasp it. But I do want to invite your listeners to consider that nothing is beyond them, that they can realize those subtle things. They can pause. They can take a minute to see. They can listen to where they're drawn. And then in that way, recognize that yoga is made up of multiple practices. And it is not limited to one practice, though that practice is a beautiful thing. It's not limited. It's more expansive. And it's about the experience of the union. And what gets you to that experience of the union is yogic practice. Sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramaya, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet.
Shanti. Beautiful. Would you translate?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we did Purnamada previously. So this is all about wholeness and the experience of who am I beyond this body and mind, and really deeply experiencing that. And that is, you know, we can go over it, but it's essentially talking about how the absolute realm is whole and the more manifested realm is whole, and that from the whole comes the whole, the whole gives the whole. And ultimately, this wholeness, this completeness that we all are remains. So it's really reminding us multiple ways that we are not separate from the ocean. Though we may feel we are the wave, we are ultimately the ocean. So that's very beautiful. And then the other verse, sarve bhavantu sukhinah, it's a wish. We do that a lot in Sanskrit. We make wishes for people. And so when you come and meet people in the Sanskrit world, they will wish. They'll just wish all over you. Wish, wish, wish. So they'll say one dear blessed second guru to me was Dr. Ramkaran Sharma. He used to say, Rame Rame Manorame. So this is like a little line from a poem about the name Manorama as Parvati, but it's also saying something very nice to me. So, he would say, Ayushmati Bhava, and so many other things, right? So may you live a happy, good, healthy, long life. So here in this mantra, we are wishing, I'm making the wish for all of us, may all beings be happy. Sarve bhavantu sukhina. And sarve santu niramaya. May all beings be niramaya. What is niramaya? Free from disease. May no one suffer of any disease. And sarve bhadrani pashyantu. May all beings see what is bhadram, what is bhadrani. So that means auspicious, But what does auspicious mean here? It means something that will really elevate you. May you be around things that elevate you as you move through your various phases of your life. And what is pashyantu is seeing, but it's not literally just what you see. But actually, pashyantu means being. May you be absorbed in that which is elevated and good and beautiful as you move through every phase. May there be something that is with you at all times, that is essential, that is beautiful. And then it ends with a ma kashchit dukha bhag bhavet, which is, ma is an emphatic no. And it's used with this particular case. It means must not. So ma kashchit, may it never be so. Dukha bhag bhavet, may it never be so that there is ma kashchit bhavet, may it never be so. Dukhabak, that you obtain some suffering, or that we obtain, or they obtain. In other words, may there be no dukkha, no suffering, because suffering is very uncomfortable for any of us who've experienced that. So this is the aim of yoga, to help us not live in la-la land and fairy land, but to have the tools to move through the difficult phases and the positive phases, to amplify them in our incarnated forms and in our lives. So that's the wish. May it be so. Bhavatu.
Thank you so much. That is such a perfect note to end this on. I'm so grateful to have had you here and to listen to all this amazing wisdom. Thank you so much, Manoramaji.
Thank you. It's so nice to see you.
Too. And can you let everyone know how to find you? Because anyone who is interested in studying Sanskrit now and who might feel inspired, they need to go and check you out and learn from you, because you are one of the best.
Thank you so much. That's very, very lovely to hear from you. And it's just wonderful to see you, of course, and to be together here in this beautiful conversation, this dialogue. So I'm very honored. And it's wonderful to see how you've expanded all of your development in your life since we saw each other last. So thank you so much. The way to reach me, to find me, to connect, is via two channels. So one is sanskritstudies.org, sanskritstudies.org. And the other way is through manorama.substack.org. So with Sanskrit Studies, you will find all the courses that I teach. I have two upcoming courses, one on Sanskrit, which the one that is starting on October 4th is a year-long training in Sanskrit. So that's October 4th, and you'll see it goes like one weekend per month or whatever it is. You have to look at the schedule to see. And we go into the Sanskrit language in depth. The other upcoming event that I have is, it's very nice for people to come to what's called satsang. Satsang happens Fridays, two satsangs a month. One is 6:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern time, which wouldn't be so good for Europeans. And the other is the one that is, the Europeans petitioned me and they were like, we want to have our time. So that one is 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. And those are drop-ins. You can find that on the website, sanskritstudies.org, to see where satsangs are. And you can find one that suits your time frame that's on Fridays, 1 to 2:30 Eastern time, which I think is like something like 7 for you guys, maybe. And then the Substack is I have a platform there where I'm teaching called Seeing Through Yogic Eyes. And so there I'm really teaching how, through audio, through video, how you can work to see through yogic eyes and then develop practice. So those are the two ways that I am working, and everybody is welcome to check them out if they so desire.
Yeah, please check her out and let us know what your takeaways are. Feel free to email us or find Manorama through social media and let us know how this episode landed with you. Okay, until next time, take very good care. Thank you.